This is The Ecology of Browsing and Grazing from Springer, Ecological Studies 195, Chapter 2, An Evolutionary History of Browsing and Grazing Ungulates by Christine Janis. 2.1, Introduction. Browsing, i.e. eating woody and non-dicotyledonous plants, and grazing, i.e. eating grass, are distinctive different types of feeding behavior among ungulates today. Ungulates with different diets have different morphologies, both craniodental ones and in aspects of the digestive system and physiologies, although some of these differences are merely related to body size, as grazers are usually larger than browsers. There's also a huge difference in the foraging behavior in terms of the relationship between resource abundance and intake rate, which is linear in browsers but asymptotic in grazers. The spatial distribution of the food resource is also different for the different types of herbage, browse being more patchily distributed than grass, and thus browsers and grazers are likely to have a very different food perception of food resources in any given ecosystem. Grass is a relatively recent type of food resource. Extensive grasslands only emerged in the later Cenozoic within the past 25 million years, while the first ungulates date back to the early Cenozoic around 55 million years ago. Browsing, probably with the incorporation of a fair amount of fruit, is thus the primitive diet of ungulates. The general evolutionary perspective is that when the grazing species evolved later, they eclipsed the browsers. While this view of the later Cenozoic rise of the grazing ungulates and the corresponding demise of the browsing ones is broadly correct, the actual evolutionary picture is, of course, much more complex. While the most familiar ungulates today, horses, cows, elephants, etc., are mainly grazers, in fact, specialized grazing is a fairly recent evolutionary adaptation. The first true grazers, i.e. animals subsisting primarily on grass year-round, are no more than 10 million years old, and a predominance of tropical grazers is as familiar to us in Africa today as a history of only a couple million years. In order to understand the evolutionary history of diets and feeding adaptations in ungulates, we need to first pose several questions. Firstly, what exactly are ungulates, and how are the different ungulate groups related to each other? Secondly, how can we deduce the feeding behavior of extinct species from their fossilized remains? And thirdly, how have differences in the Earth's climate and environment in past times influenced the distribution and abundance of ungulates of different feeding behaviors? Box 2.1. And this is going to be long. Glossary Guide for Extinct Taxa. See chapters in Janis et al. 1998 and Rose 2006 for more details. Ancyrotherinae. A subfamily of horses, family Equidae, known from the late Eocene to the late Miocene of North America and the Miocene of Eurasia, ranging from sheep-sized earlier forms to the size of a modern horse, later forms. More derived than the Hyracotherinae in in having more loafed teeth, indicative of a more frilivorous-like diet, but all were brachydont, presumed browsers, and somewhat longer legs, with the loss of the fourth toe in the front foot and no evidence of a foot pad. Brontotheriidae, a family of perissodactyls, also known as titanotheres, all members are brachydont, indicative of browsing, known from the Eocene of North America and Eurasia. Early members were pig-sized and hornless, later forms became larger and grew forked bony nasal horns, and some of the latest forms were of a comparable size to a white rhino. Calicotherioidea, a superfamily of perissodactyls, all members brachydont, indicative of browsing. The earlier Eomoropidae, known from the Eocene of Asia and North America, were small, dog-sized, unspecialized forms. The later Calicotheriidae, known from the Oligocene to Pleistocene of Eurasia, the Miocene of North America, and the Miocene to Pleistocene of Africa, were large camel-sized forms that had substituted claws for hooves and likely fed with a bipedal stance, clawing down vegetation. Condylarthra, a paraphyletic assemblage, order, of basal archaic ungulates, comprising of at least eight families, known from the Paleocene and Eocene of North America, South America, and Eurasia, mostly ranging in size from the size of a squirrel to the size of a pig. Some carnivorous forms reached bear size. Most forms had bunodont cheek teeth indicative of omnivory. Some had loafed teeth indicative of herbivory, while some were even carnivorous. None had cursorial, running-adapted postcranial morphologies, nor any degree of hypsodonty. The carnivorous mesonychid condylarths are considered to be the sister group to the Cetartiodactyla, but the precise relationship of other families to extant ungulates is not resolved. Dinotheriidae, a family of proboscideans known from the Miocene to the Pleistocene of Africa and Eurasia, characterized by very large size and the possession of recurved lower tusks only, no upper tusks. Cheek teeth were tapir-like, bilophodont and brachydont, indicative of a specialized browsing diet. Dinocerata, an order of ungulate-like, but probably not ungulate-related, mammals known from the Paleocene and Eocene of North America and Asia, ranging from sheep size to rhino size, with later forms having bizarre series of horns on their skulls and saber-like upper canines. They had brachydont, bilophodont teeth, indicative of a diet on soft brows, and later forms had postcranial adaptations, indicative of a semi-aquatic lifestyle. Gomphotheriidae, a family of proboscidea known from the Miocene and Pleistocene to Pleistocene of North America, Eurasia, and Africa, ranged from small rhino-sized to modern elephant-sized. Earlier forms had cheek teeth that were brachydont and bunodont to bunolophodont, indicative of omnivory and or browsing. Whoa, an omnivorous proboscidean? Yikes. Included bizarre shovel-tusked forms. Some later Pliocene forms were developed highly loafed hypsodont cheek teeth, indicative of mixed feeding and or grazing. Hipparionini. Horses belonging to an extinct tribe of the subfamily Equinae. Modern horses and their direct ancestors belong to the tribe Equini, known from the middle Miocene to Pliocene of North America and late Miocene to Pliocene of Eurasia and Africa, survived into mid-Pleistocene of Africa. Earlier Hipparionines and equines were similar types of pony-sized animals, but Hipparionines in general remained less hypsodont than later equines, and they retained a tridactyl foot. Dental microwear suggests mainly mixed feeding diets rather than grazing. Hypertragulidae, a primitive family of ruminants known from the Eocene and Oligocene of North America and Asia. Diminutive forms about the size of the extant tragulus, tragulidae, teeth range from brachydont to hypsodont, but not likely to have been grazing. Hyracotherianae, a subfamily of horses known from the Eocene of North America. Small forms, cat to small dog-sized, with relatively bunodont cheek teeth indicative of a full folivorous or frugivorous diet, and relatively short legs retaining three pairs of toes in the hindfoot and four in the forefoot, with the likely presence of a tapir-like foot pad. Indricotherianae, a subfamily of rhinos of the extinct family Hyracodontidae, known from the late Oligocene and early Miocene of Western Asia, all with brachydont cheek teeth indicative of browsing, known as, quote, giraffe rhinos, unquote, because of the evolution of a long neck and long legs, including the largest ever known land mammal weighing up to 15 tons. Lidopterna? An extinct order of South American ungulates, known from the Paleocene to the Pleistocene, comprising forms with brachydont cheek teeth indicative of browsing, or somewhat hypsodont teeth indicative of mixed feeding, generally resembling horses or camels. Mammutidae, a family of proboscidea, mastodons, known from the Miocene to the Pleistocene of North America, Eurasia, and Africa, ranged from small rhino-sized to modern elephant-sized and had cheek teeth that were brachydont and bunolophodont, indicative of browsing. Notoungulata, an order of South American ungulates known from the Paleocene to the Pleistocene, comprising forms with high-crowned or ever-growing cheek teeth, but were not necessarily all grazers, and generally resembling rodents, hyraxes, or rhinos. Oreodontoidea, extinct superfamily of possibly tylopod artiodactyls, pig-like or hyrax-like in appearance, known from the late Eocene to late Miocene of North America. They had combined They combined relatively derived solenodont cheek teeth, albeit in a snub-nosed skull, earlier forms all brachydont, with a primitive postcranium that retained a digitigrade stance. The earlier and more primitive Agriochiridae, cat-sized to dog-sized, had replaced their hooves with claws and were likely secondarily arboreal. Whoa, that's wild. The later Mericoidodontidae, hyrax-sized to taper-sized, were the commonest mammals in the Oligocene and the early Miocene of North America. Some later Miocene forms showed a tendency to evolve somewhat longer legs and more hypsodont teeth. Paleomericidae? A family of deer-like and deer-related artiodactyls, known from Miocene and Pleistocene of North America, subfamily Dromomericinae and Eurasia. Mostly brachydont, indicative of browsing, some forms slightly hypsodont and may have been mixed feeders. Many forms characterized by a third median occipital horn in addition to a pair of frontal horns. Paleotheriidae. A family of horse-like and horse-related perissodactyls known from the Eocene of Eurasia, ranging from dog size to modern horse size. All brachydont, indicative of browsing. Pantodonta. An order of ungulate-like, but probably not ungulate-related mammals, known from the Paleocene and Eocene of North America, Eurasia, and South America, ranging from goat-sized to bison-sized, in later forms resembling ground sloths or hippos. All brachydont, indicative of browsing, and some forms were likely semi-aquatic. Civetherianae, a subfamily of Giraffidae, known from the Miocene to the Pleistocene of Africa and Eurasia, differed from extant Giraffinae in being relatively short-legged and heavily built, often termed, quote, moose-like, unquote, but with shorter legs than a moose, with horns that were more lobate in form than giraffes, giraffines. Cheek teeth were generally more hypsodont than giraffines, indicating a more mixed feeding type of diet. Taeniodonta, an order of ungulate-like but probably not ungulate-related mammals, known from the Paleocene and Eocene of primarily North America, ranging from cat-sized to pig-sized. Later forms had hypsilodont, ever-growing cheek teeth, and showed adaptations for digging rather resembling large pigs. Their hypsilodont cheek teeth were probably related to grit found on excavated roots and tubers, as their diet otherwise appears to have been omnivorous. Point 1.1, ungulate phylogeny and evolutionary history. While ungulates have long been considered as a clade, united by the possession of hooves, which is not in fact strictly true in any case, recent molecular phylogenies have refuted the monophyly of the ungulata, see Springer et al. 2005 for review. The panungulates, elephants, hyraxes, and sea cows, are now united with other African endemic mammals in the basal placental clade Afrotheria. Although artiodactyls and perissodactyls are fairly closely related, they are not sister taxa. The perissodactyls are now considered to be more closely related to a clade consisting of carnivorans plus pangolins, and artiodactyls are now included with whales in the Cetartiodactyla. The name of the clade uniting this diverse assemblage is the Ferungulata. It is difficult to state how extinct ungulate groups, such as the condylarths and the endemic South American ungulates, fit within this new phylogenetic scheme. The South American orders Notoungulata and Lidopterna paralleled northern ungulates in the later Cenozoic in their body evolution of morphologies, with types resembling rhinos, rodents, hyraxes, horses, and camels, and in similar evolutionary transitions to animals with skulls and teeth adapted for grazing and limbs adapted for cursoriality. See the glossary for terms of extinct ungulate groups. Box 2.1. This chapter will consist mainly of the evolution of feeding adaptations in the two major orders of extant ungulates, the perissodactyla, or odd-toed ungulates, and the artiodactyla, or even-toed ungulates. See figure 2.1. Both orders are of Northern Hemisphere origin, first appearing at the start of the Eocene 55 million years ago in North America and Eurasia. Both orders show considerable evolutionary parallelisms, including the evolution of hypsodont, high-crowned cheek teeth, and elongated limbs with ungulograde foot posture, i.e. standing on the tip of their phalanges, like a ballerina endpoint. But they differ profoundly in their morphophysiological adaptations to folivory, the eating of leafy material, whether browse or grass. Perissodactyls are specialized hindgut fermenters, while camelid and ruminant artiodactyls, in the taxonomic sense, are foregut fermenting ruminants, in the physiological sense. Such differences in digestive physiology are reflected in differences in both craniodental morphology and feeding behavior. For example, in terms of craniodental morphology, hindgut fermenters process more food per day than ruminants, all other things such as body size, diet, etc. being equal. So they have a greater volume of masticatory musculature, which is reflective in a deeper angle of the mandible. In terms of feeding behavior, ruminants are often more limited in their daily uptake due to their longer digestive passage time, and so they have to feed in a more selective fashion than a hindgut fermenter and use their tongues for food selection to a much greater extent than other ungulates. Figure 2.1 shows the distribution of the major families of perissodactyls and artiodactyls through time. Note that forms have craniodental adaptations for grazing are relatively few and appear relatively late in ungulate evolutionary history. It is worth making a brief mention of the evolutionary history of the proboscideans and hyracoids, both hindgut fermenters, even though these orders are not closely related to other ungulates, see above. Present-day hyraxes are a relict, specialized clade of small-bodied forms. The extinct family Pliohyracidae is comprised by the dominant small to medium-sized herbivores in the Eocene and Oligocene of Africa, with a diversity of morphologies, including a long-legged antelope-like form, but none showing any craniodental adaptations for grazing. This radiation was largely gone by the Miocene, perhaps due to the influx of modern ungulates into Africa, but some Pliohyracids persisted into the Pleistocene, including a large hippo-like form, and were also found across southern Eurasia in the later Cenozoic. The extant family Procaviidae first appeared in the late Miocene, and the modern genus Procavia, the rock hyrax, is the only one that takes a large amount of grass into its diet. Proboscideans also originated in Africa and comprised around 10 separate families. Only three families, including the Miocene to recent Elephantidae, show craniodental morphologies indicative of grazing, such as Hypsodont, complexly loafed cheek teeth. Other proboscideans have Bunodont cheek teeth, indicative of omnivory, or Bilophodont cheek teeth, indicative of browsing. See figure 2.2 for food types. Hyracoids and proboscideans are not shown in figure 2.1 for reasons of economy of space. However, as with other ungulates, there is no evidence of any craniodental morphology indicative of grazing until later than the Miocene. 2.1.2, determination of feeding adaptations. The large diversity of extant ungulates of known diet has made it possible to quantitatively determine features of cranial and dental morphology that correlate with feeding behavior. Ungulate cheek teeth, molars and premolars, are the most obvious dietary indicators. Omnivores have low cusp molars with rounded, bumpy cusps, bunodont, designed to process non-brittle food such as fruit and roots. Many different herbivorous forms have evolved this type of dentation, a type of more loafed or ridged molar, where the individual cusps are thrown into higher occlusal relief and are run together as longitudinal or horizontal ridges or loafs. These teeth have been evolved to have maximum efficiency after initial wear, so that the enamel is worn off the top and of the loafs, exposing a lake of dentine with enamel edges on either side, and these loafs act to shred more fibrous food, such as leaves. The different way in which the cusps have been linked to these loafs result in different patterns of occlusal anatomy. Ruminant artiodactyls have selenodont teeth, figure 2.2d, where the main pattern of the loafs is in an anterior-posterior direction, while the perissodactyls have a lophodont, figure 2.2e, or bilophodont, figure 2.2b, teeth, where the main pattern of loafs is in a labiolingual direction. Other herbivorous mammals, such as warthogs and rodents, have evolved loafed teeth independently in different fashion. A more fibrous diet of grass rather than browse is reflected in both the level of hypsodonty, see below, and in the occlusal pattern. Highly specialized grazing ruminants and perissodactyls have more complex plagiolophodont simple enamel patterns accomplished by cross-linking the enamel ridges. In other mammals, such as elephants, and also in many rodents and in wombats, the teeth become multi-loafed, with numerous parallel ridges of enamel that can no longer easily be homologized with original mammalian tooth cusp pattern. Any tooth in which the full crown is not visible above the gum line at eruption can be considered hypsodont to some extent, but there are varying degrees of hypsodonty. In extreme cases, the crown height may be 6 or 7 times the width of the tooth. Hypsodont teeth usually have a layer of cementum that coats the tooth and fills in the spaces between the cusps. All dental dimensions scale isometrically. Thus, a simple ratio, or, quote, hypsodonty index, unquote, of the unworn crown height of the third molar, usually the highest crown tooth, to its width or length can be compared across taxa of different body sizes. Fortelius et al. 2002 define a general rule of thumb for hypsodonty classes based on the ratio of height to length of the second upper or lower molar. A brachiodont tooth has a ratio of less than 0.8. A mesodont, partially hypsodont tooth, has a ratio of 0.8 to 1.2, and a hypsodont tooth has a ratio of greater than 1.2. The traditional determinant of a browsing versus grazing diet in fossil ungulates has been the level of hypsodonty, or the degree of molar crown height, as the silica contained in grass tissue results in greater wear on the teeth. A year-round diet of grass in a perforce open habitat necessitates a hypsodont dentition, but other dietary or environmental factors may lead to hypsodonty. Fortelius et al. 2002 note that the factors that correlate with hypsodonty are, quote, increased fibrousness, increased abrasiveness due to intracellular or extraneous dust, and decreased nutritional value, unquote. Hypsodonty has evolved numerous times within mammals and probably represents a fairly simple developmental change involving a delaying of the closure of the tooth roots. For an animal with an abrasive diet, and hence a high rate of tooth wear, hypsodonty is an important adaptation as a dentition that is insufficiently durable. As a dentition that is insufficiently durable will result in a shortened lifespan, and hence in reduced reproductive output. Thus, there is strong evolutionary imperative to make teeth hypsodont if the diet is abrasive. While almost all grazers have highly hypsodont cheek teeth, not all hypsodont ungulates are grazers, as the silica contained in grass is far from the sole abrasive element in an herbivorous diet. The exceptions to a high degree of hypsodonty in grazers include taxa such as the hippo, Hippopotamus amphibious, and the rock hyrax, Procavia capensis. These animals, both hypsodont but at a relatively low level, both have relatively low metabolic rates for their size, resulting in less food consumed per lifetime and thus overall less dental abrasion. Grazing kangaroos are also less hypsodont than other grazing ungulates, again probably due to the relatively low metabolic rate of marsupials. Fresh grass grazers, such as the reduncine bovids, are also less hypsodont than grazers, consisting on grass in more dusty habitats. Open habitat mixed feeders can also be highly hypsodont, approaching the level of hypsodonty of grazers in the same habitat, even if including little grass in the diet. Most gazelles fall into this category, and the pronghorn, Antilocapra americana, is among the most hypsodont of ruminants, despite having only about 12% of grass in its diet. The obvious interpretation of this correlation is that grit and dust accumulating on the food must also contribute to the abrasive nature of the diet. Hypsodont taxa in the fossil record clearly provides some form of paleoecological signal. Increasing levels of hypsodonty in today's ungulate communities show a negative correlation with levels of rainfall, i.e., hypsodont ungulates are more prevalent in arid habitats. A number of aspects of craniodental morphology can be shown to correlate with dietary behavior. The features distinguishing grazers from browsers relate to the different physical demands of feeding on grass versus browse. Grass is in general more fibrous and abrasive than browse, and a more fibrous and abrasive, i.e. lower quality, diet it requires a greater intake and a greater degree of mastication. Grazers have bigger masseter muscles than browsers, reflected in a larger and deeper angle of the jaw, and a longer masseteric fossa on the skull. Browsers are selective feeders, as are most mixed feeders, and both of these feeding types have a narrow muzzle in comparison with grazers, who have a broad muzzle for the intake of large bites. However, the majority of living ungulates are ruminant artiodactyls, and quantitative correlations of morphology and behavior derived from ruminants may not be directly applicable to other types of ungulates, although general qualitative observations may still hold true. Dentalware, microware, mesoware, or macroware, is another way of determining past diets. Dentalware records the actual food preparation and mastication events that took place during the life of an animal, and thus holds the potential for recording the actual ecological history. But dentalware alone may be an insufficient guide to diet because of the continual abrasion of teeth during the life of an animal, and especially the abrasion of the surface enamel that records the microwear patterns. Salunius and Sombrepin, 2002, and Sombrepin et al., 2004, summarize much of the current uses of dentalware in dietary determination in ungulates. Another recently developed methodology is the use of carbon isotopes in dental enamel. Following the shift in photosynthesis in tropical grasses around 7 million years ago from a C3 carbon cycle to a C4 carbon cycle, the dental enamel of tropical grazers contains a different composition of enamel isotope than that of browsers. And mixed feeders have intermediate values between browsers and grazers. While dental isotopes are only applicable in the rather limited sense of fairly recent ungulates, i.e. within the past 7 million years ago or so, in tropical or subtropical settings, they can be extremely useful in such paleoecological situations, especially in combination with morphological features. How does one, then, determine the diet of an extinct ungulate? To a good first approximation, molar occlusal morphology can distinguish from omnivores, omnivores from folivores, and hypsodonty, as well as occlusal morphology to a certain extent, can distinguish browsers from grazers, but with a certain degree of caution. A low-crowned brachydont ungulate is extremely unlikely to be anything else but a browser, but hypsodont taxa may have a variety of diets. Within hypsodont taxa, craniodental features and microwear can be used to distinguish mixed feeders and grazers in most circumstances, and isotopes are useful for distinguishing diets among later Cenozoic taxa in dry, lowland tropical habitats. Point 1.3. Cenozoic changes in climate. Evolutionary transitions in ungulate diets can only be understood in the context of climatic changes on planet Earth over the past 60 million years or so. This environmental history is related to changes in the movement of the continents, which have in turn resulted in changes in ocean currents, mountain building, polar glaciation, etc. Understanding of the different environmental patterns on different continents comes from a variety of sources, including paleo temperatures determined from deep sea foraminifera. Figure 2.3 summarizes the evolution of grassland habitats and the changing global paleo temperatures. Note that grass phytoliths have now been isolated from the latest Cretaceous of India, but there is no evidence for extensive grasslands in Asia until the later Cenozoic. At the start of the Cenozoic, 65 million years ago, the entire globe was a fairly equable, warm place, with evidence of mainly forest cover and tropical-like forests extending up into the high latitudes, although herbaceous, non-grassy, open habitats are recorded in places such as Central Asia. Rapid warming at the end of the Paleocene was followed by the early Eocene climatic optimum, 55 million years to 52 million years, see Zakos et al., 2001. Following this optimum, the climate cooled in the higher latitudes, with the arrival of winter frosts and more deciduous types of vegetation. By the late Middle Eocene, around 45 million years ago. Although grass fossils are known from the Eocene, and there seems to have been areas of open habitat, such habitats have been termed woody savannas, not dominated by grasses, and have no analogs among modern habitat types. A million years ago or so, at the end of the Eocene, there was an episode of extreme cooling, setting the stage in higher latitudes for the more temperate world of the Oligocene, where deciduous temperate woodlands spread in the mid-latitudes along patches of more arid climate. Temperatures started to rise again in the late Oligocene, around 25 million years ago, and after a brief fall, reached a further peak around 14 million years ago, the mid-Miocene optimum. Paleobotanical evidence shows that grasslands spread during the Miocene to higher in the higher latitudes, but tropical areas such as East Africa had only limited, if any, savanna regions at this time. The Antarctic ice cap, which had its inception in the late Eocene, was firmly in place by the Miocene. After around 14 million years ago, the temperatures fell in the higher latitudes, with additional evidence for increasing aridity. By the latest Miocene, around 6 million years ago, the short grass savannas of North America were replaced by tall grass prairie. And there's evidence of woodland savannas in East Africa. Additional higher latitude cooling in the Pleistocene brought new types of cold adapted or arid adapted vegetational habitats, tundra and taiga to the high latitudes, and true deserts to the tropical and subtropical regions. An extremely important event in establishing the modern grassland habitats was in the Middle Pliocene at 2.5 million years ago. At this time, the Isthmus of Panama appeared, linking North and South America with subsequent animal migrations and disrupting the circum-equatorial circulation. This resulted in the aridification of East Africa and the establishment of the extensive grasslands that support much of the diversity of grazing ungulates today. The Arctic ice cap first appeared in the Pliocene, and from the start of the Pleistocene, about 2 million years ago, the periodic fluctuations in Earth's climate caused by the various aspects of the rotation of the Earth on its own axis, the Milankovitch cycles, were sufficient to regularly plunge the higher latitudes into periods of extended glaciation, which we term ice ages. 2.2. Fossil record evidence of dietary evolution in ungulates. 2.2.1. Early archaic ungulates and ungulate-like mammals, 65 to 40 million years ago. Paleocene, quote, ungulates were various taxa ascribed to the order Condylarthra that probably contains the ancestry of both artiodactyls and perissodactyls. Other larger ungulate-like taxa, but probably not related to true ungulates, such as taeniodonts, pantodonts, and dinoceratins, were also around in the Paleocene of North America and Asia, persisting into the mid-Eocene. These taxa were all apparently predominantly omnivorous, taenodonts and most condylarths, or were adapted to a diet of relatively non-fibrous browse, other condylarths, pantodonts, and dinoceratins. There was little evidence of any herbivores subsisting on fibrous vegetation, with the possible exception of a couple smaller condylarth taxa in the late Paleocene. 2.2.2, the Eocene emergence of modern ungulates, 55 to 34 million years ago. The early Eocene saw a great diversification of artiodactyls and perissodactyls in the northern hemisphere, and the initial appearance of small to mid-sized mammals that appeared to be specialized folivores, primates, as well as ungulates. This mammalian community shift suggests that something happened to the structure of the vegetational habitat in the higher latitudes where these mammals were found, with leaves now available as a broad dietary resource. The early Eocene vegetation of mid to high latitudes was also similar to that of modern tropical forests in terms of plant diversity. Eocene fossil localities supported a wide diversity of small to medium-sized terrestrial herbivores, unlike the situation in present-day equatorial forest habitats, which have a paucity of small terrestrial herbivores. The initial diversity of folivorous ungulates was among the perissodactyls. The main diversity at this time was among the tapiroids, mostly sheep-sized or smaller. Some of these animals were ancestral to modern tapirs, others to rhinos, first appearing in the Middle Eocene, and others were evolutionary dead-ends. Most tapiroids had bilophodont cheek teeth, indicative of folivory. Hyracotherian equids and the Eurasian equid-related paleotheres were also common, especially in the early Eocene, most ranging in size from the proverbial wire-haired fox terrier to the size of a large sheep. In general, their teeth were more bunodont than those of the tapiroids and rhinos, indicative of a more omnivorous diet, although some European forms had more loafed teeth, suggestive of a higher degree of folivory. Other families of extinct browsing perissodactyls included calicotheres, dog-sized at this time, and brontotheres. Artiodactyls were also common in the early Eocene, at this time small, tragulid-sized, with bunodont cheek teeth, indicative of a generalized omnivorous diet. Artiodactyls started to diversify into the modern lineages. Swines, pig-related forms, tylopods, camel-related forms, and ruminants in the late Eocene, coincident with the high-latitude climatic deterioration. Dental changes included more specialized bunodont cheek teeth in many of the swines, indicative of a more specialized omnivorous diet, and the evolution of a more selenodont cheek teeth in the tylopods and ruminants, indicative of more specialized herbivory. The common selenodont artiodactyls of the late Eocene and Oligocene were various types of now extinct small to medium-sized traguloid ruminants and tylopods. The declining temperatures in the higher latitudes during the late Eocene, basically resulted in the extinction of smaller, generalized omnivorous forms among all ungulate groups, and the rise of more specialized folivores along with surviving artiodactyl and parasitoidal lineages, while the remaining condylarths and ungulate-like mammals became extinct. Most higher-latitude primates also disappeared during this time. The megaherbivore brontotheres also went extinct at the end of the Eocene, possibly unable to sustain their specialized browsing diet in higher latitudes at this time. Rhinos persisted through this period, but tapiroids were badly hit, and equoids, horses, and paleotheres became completely extinct in the New World. The Old World, sorry. The familiar story of horse evolution relates an unbroken phylogeny through North American Eocene, but this masks the fact that the abundance of individual equoid fossils decreased sharply following the early Eocene diversity of the subfamily Hyracotherianae. Only in the late Eocene did equids return to North America in fossil record in abundance, with the first member of the subfamily Ancyrotherianae, the sheep-sized Mesohippus. Mesohippus was a very different beast from the earlier Hyracotheres, and had more strongly loafed teeth indicative of committed folivory and more cursorially adapted limbs. This pattern of late Eocene parasitoidal decline and artiodactyl diversification has often been held as indicative of competitive replacement, ascribed to the supposedly superior foregut system of digestion in ruminating artiodactyls. But this is not supported by patterns in the fossil record. The late Eocene fossil record shows a general shift from omnivory to folivory, in terms of dental morphologies, in rodents as well as ungulates. Ruminating artiodactyls may have been fortuitously better adapted than parasitoidals to cope with the changing vegetation of the later Eocene, due to their ability to subsist on smaller amounts of more selectively chosen vegetation. The climatic changes, including increased patterns of seasonality, of the later Eocene may have resulted in changes in vegetational abundance, but perhaps more importantly, would probably have resulted in a greater differentiation of fiber content between plant leaf and stem, allowing for selective feeding habits that characterize present-day ruminants. Foregut fermentation would have also been useful for the detoxification of secondary plant compounds. Small to medium-sized ruminants fare better than hindgut fermenters, where food is lower in quantity but higher in quality. The increased body size of many parasitoidals in the late Eocene, e.g. among brontotheres, may also reflect an adaptation to changing patterns of abundance and quality. 2.2.3, the lull before the storm, Oligocene and early Miocene times, 34 million years ago to 20 million years ago. The 10 million years of the Oligocene and the first few million years of the Miocene were a time of relative calm. Following the high latitude temperatures of the later Eocene, the rapid plunge in temperatures just after the Eocene-Oligocene boundary, and the extinctions in Europe, the quote, Grand Coupure, that resulted not only from climatic change, but from an influx of taxa from Asia. The mid to late latitude climate would have been equable, but also temperate and seasonal, with winter frosts. The prominent vegetation was deciduous forest or woodland, with some areas of relative aridity in North America, but no true modern-type grasslands or deserts. Among North American and Eurasian ungulates, tapiroids were few, and the modern family Tapiridae was now well established. Note that at this time there was not yet faunal exchange between Eurasia and Africa, and India was still a largely isolated island. Rhinos were represented by a variety of forms, of medium to large body size, including the huge Indricotheres. Ancyrotherian equids underwent a moderate diversification in North America, and Anchitherium is probably how that family is supposed to be pronounced then. Anchitherium itself migrated to Eurasia in the early Miocene. All of these parasitoidals had skulls and dentitions suggestive of generalized browsing. The general artiodactyl diversity was primarily a continuation of the late Eocene radiation of small or medium-sized browsers and omnivores. However, it was among the Oligocene artiodactyls that the first incidences of hypsodonty appeared among ungulates, at least in the Northern Hemisphere. While some native South American ungulates had hypsodont teeth from Eocene times, this feature alone, as noted above, is not necessarily indicative of grazing behavior, and many hypsodont notoungulates, in fact, had dental microware indicative of browsing or mixed feeding. Oligocene hypsodont ungulates include several North American taxa, the diminutive Hypertragulid hippicidus, the rock-like Hyrax oreodonts, such as the rock Hyrax-like oreodonts such as Cespia, and the gazelle-like camelids such as Stenomalus. The appearance of these hypsodont ungulates has been used in support of the notion of an early spread of grasslands and grazers in North America at this time, but the dental morphology of these animals does not support a grazing diet. These ungulates all had very narrow muzzles, typical of specialized mixed feeders in open habitats, where grit and abrasive types of brows were sometimes the main cause of high rates of tooth wear. It is likely that they represented some type of more specialized selective feeders living in open arid areas. Some grass may have formed a part of their diet, but they were far from being specialized grazers. All of these lineages went extinct without issue during the Miocene. They were not ancestral to any of the later groups of hypsodont mammals. The first was that it for that page? No. 2.2.4, the rise of grasslands, 20 to 10 million years ago. During the late early Miocene, around 20 to 14 million years ago, both floral and faunal change became prominent, with mid-latitude grasslands diversifying in North America and Eastern Asia. Grasslands may have been established several million years earlier in southern South America, and a fauna characterized by ungulates with hypsodont teeth occurred as early as the early Oligocene. Sea levels fell, and a land bridge opened up between Africa and Eurasia, allowing migration of proboscideans out of Africa and the immigration into Africa of modern northern types of ungulates, rhinos, and various ruminants such as bovids and giraffoids. There is little evidence for grasslands in Africa at this time, although the Middle Miocene, 14 million years, site of Fort Ternan in Kenya contains evidence of grasses, fossil grasses, and some ungulates that were probably mixed feeders. In North America, paleobotanical evidence exists for grasslands during the late Oligocene and earliest Miocene for both plant phytoliths and fossil soils. However, the soil evidence, as well as evidence from other organisms such as legumes and insects, points to initial arid bunchgrass scrubland, with more savanna-like short sod grasslands developing in the late early Miocene. The advent of grasslands in North America before the evolution of hypsodont ungulates such as equids has been argued as evidence for adaptive lag, quote-unquote. That is, the morphological evolution has not yet caught up to the behavioral evolution. This evolutionary scenario is highly unlikely. As mentioned previously, hypsodonty is essential for an animal to eat an abrasive diet, so hypsodonty also seems to be an easy feature for a And hypsodonty also seems to be an easy feature to evolve, as it has evolved so many times convergently among mammals. The first pecarins, horned ruminants, including the early members of modern families Bovidae, Cervidae, and Giraffidae, made their first appearance in Eurasia around 18 million years ago. The earliest definite bovid, Eotragus, is known from around 18 million years ago in Europe and Pakistan. Some cervids of a similar age are also known from Europe, and some large giraffoids are known from the early Miocene of Spain. New types of ruminant artiodactyls appeared in North America, including antelope haprids, pronghorns, and paleomerisids. Also in North America, larger and more derived types of camelids appeared, along with a great radiation of the first member of the modern equid subfamily, Equinae, the genus Merychippus. However, at this point, none of these ungulates had craniodental morphologies indicative of grazing, even though hypsodonty was apparent among equids, antelocaprids, and camelids. This initial rise in the numbers of hypsodont ungulates has long been interpreted as the radiation of a, quote, savanna-like, unquote, fauna. But it is not at all clear that these hypsodont taxa were actually specialized grazers. The majority of hypsodont Miocene equids have dental microwear indicating mixed feeding. Many lineages of camels also became more hypsodont at this time, but again, their craniodental morphology doesn't support the notion of a grazing habit. And all of these taxa display rather moderate levels of hypsodonty in comparison with modern grazers. Until recently, the fate of the browsing ungulates during the Miocene was thought to have been one of gradual extinction, replaced by the, quote, better adapted grazers. In the familiar story of horse evolution, there is rarely a mention of the parallel diversification to the hypsodont forms of specialized browsing and cheirotherian equids that survived into the late Miocene in both North America and Eurasia, ranging from the goat-sized Archaeohippus up to the horse-sized Hyohippus and Megahippus. This radiation of browsing horses is merely a portion of the diversity of late and early middle Miocene browsers. Other browsers included the paleomerisids, the bizarrely clawed chelicotheres, various types of rhinos, and a diversity of mid-sized proboscideans such as mastodons, mabutidae, and gomphotheres. The evolutionary pattern of these browsers has been best documented in North America, but similar patterns are apparent in Western Europe. In North America, not only were browsing ungulates highly diverse taxonomically on a continental scale, but they were also exceedingly species-rich at individual fossil localities. The numbers of browsing ungulates at mid-Miocene fossil sites in North America greatly exceeds those in any habitat today, and similar patterns appear to hold true for ungulates at localities in Eurasia and Africa, and for terrestrial herbivores in South America and Australia. This abundance of browsers disappears from North America by the start of the late Miocene, around 11 million years ago, and an overall decline of ungulates also occurs at this time in North America, Western Eurasia, and in Pakistan. These paleo communities clearly represent some sort of woodland savanna habitat, but with no precise modern analog. It is not clear how these mid-Miocene habitats achieved greater density of species, especially in terms of the numbers of browsers, than in their modern-day equivalents. Our preferred explanation is for greater levels of atmospheric carbon dioxide than pre-industrial levels, leading to greater levels of primary productivity, but we acknowledge that this hypothesis is at odds with the current geochemical evidence. Additionally, species richness does not correlate in a simple fashion with productivity in modern ungulate faunas. Prinz and Ulf, 1996, note that species richness of African grazers is actually highest at intermediate levels of grass productivity. Whatever the explanation, this great diversity of mid-Miocene browsers occurring concurrently at the early diversification of more hypsodont open habitat forms is an unappreciated evolutionary event. 2.2.5, the rise of grazing ungulates, 10 to 2 million years ago. It was not until the start of the late Miocene, around 10 million years ago, that ungulates appeared with morphologies consistent with more specialized grazing adaptations. Note that, in general, the browsing lineages of the earlier Miocene went extinct without issue, although all grazers were obviously derived from browsers at some point in evolutionary history. The lineages that remained as browsers in the mid-Miocene did not later transform into grazers. The remaining browsers in the late Miocene of North America were considerably bigger in body size than previously, indicating a declining quality and abundance of suitable forage. A classic evolutionary pattern of distinct grazing versus browsing lineages can be seen among North American horses. In the early Miocene, the equid lineage split into one leading to the modern equinae with the emergence of the genus Parahippus, and the lineage leading to the specialized large browsing horses of the later Miocene, derived members of the Ancyrotherianae. These browsing horses, e.g. Anchitherium, Hyohippus, and Megahippus, were a successful radiation for a good 10 million years, but went extinct without issue during the climate changes of the later Miocene. They did not change their diet at this time. Instead, the radiation into the grazing niche came from the equinae line that had opted for a more mixed feeding diet back in the early Miocene. Another example is the North American dromomerisids, paleomerisid ruminants. The final members of this predominantly browsing lineage showed some craniodental changes indicative of a more mixed feeding strategy in the latest Miocene, but still declined in numbers and went extinct fairly rapidly, while at the same time there was an expansion of the antelope caprids that were previously more adapted for mixed feeding. The general evolutionary pattern in the late Miocene is for browsing lineages to be replaced by ones that adapted for more fibrous diets, e.g. replacement of the tragulids and cervids by bovids in the Siwalik faunas of Pakistan, see Berry 1995 and Berry et al. 1995, rather than the browsers themselves undergoing evolutionary change. Likewise, ungulate lineages do not transform back into browsing forms once they have evolved the more derived craniodental apparatus of grazers or mixed feeders. A possible exception to this is the evolution of the specialized high-level browsing gironuch, whatever that is, Lidocranius walleri, that has a brachydont dentition, presumably evolved from the more hypsodont dentition of other gazelles. Ah, that's what it is. In North America, hypsodont horses, members of the extant tribe Equini and the extinct tribe Hipparionini, diversified immensely in the late Miocene, and one lineage of Hipparionines, or perhaps a couple, migrated into Eurasia by 10 million years ago and there from there into Africa. This time marks the appearance of the classic mid-latitude savanna faunas, the Clarendonian chronofauna in North America and the Hipparion fauna in Eurasia. These later equines were generally larger than the early members of the equinae, such as Merychippus, and approaching the size of modern equids, although some secondarily dwarfed lineages also existed, and had more hypsodont cheek teeth and craniodental features indicative of a more fibrous diet, such as steep mandibles and broader muzzles. However, patterns of dental microwear suggest that these equids were still predominantly mixed feeders. The taxonomic diversity of early late Miocene, around 11 to 8 million years ago, in North American equids was very high. Continent-wide, there were 10 sympatric genera, each with a large diversity of species, and individual fossil localities commonly contained half a dozen different equid species, making equids as taxonomically diverse as grazing bovids are today in Africa. With the exception of the short-legged rhinoceros teleosteus, no other ungulates in North America appeared to challenge equids as grass specialists until the very end of the Miocene, when hypsodont proboscideans, gomphotheres, first appeared. During the late Miocene, there was significant radiation of hypsodont camelids, and also of the more derived antilocaprids, the antilocaprines, which include the modern pronghorn, and which were more hypsodont than the early myricoidontine antilocaprids. But the craniodental features of these taxa, e.g. relatively narrow muzzles, are indicative of mixed feeding rather than grazing. In the early late Miocene of Eurasia, there was a reduction in the number of browsers such as suids, tapirs, tragulids, and brachydont rhinos, suggesting a loss of forest habitat and a radiation of bovids, equids, and more hypsodont rhinos and giraffoids, suggesting the spread of more grass-dominated habitats. However, these faunas contained few undoubted grazing species, and the hypsodont forms most likely being mixed feeders, and the habitat of these localities appears to have been woodland and shrubland rather than an open savanna. Few highly hypsodont bovids were present in Africa. The late Miocene fauna contained a large diversity of suids, rhinos, proboscideans, and giraffids, as well as bovids and Hipparion equids, probably representing an assemblage of browsers and mixed feeders. 2.2.6. The late Cenozoic dawn of the modern ungulate fauna. Global temperatures fell dramatically in the latest Miocene, as did mammalian taxonomic diversity, and the mid-latitude vegetational habitats apparently became more arid. Around 8 million years ago, there was a shift in grass photosynthetic biochemistry from the C3 cycle to the C4 cycle in lower latitudes in North America and Asia. It has been claimed that this event had a significant impact on the grazing mammals. A greater diversity of hypsodont artiodactyls, including bovids, appeared in Pakistan in this time, while brachydont taxa such as suids and giraffids declined, but there was little overall impact on the hypsodonty levels of ungulates in North America. Various examples of gigantism existed among ungulates at this time. There were four sympatric genera of oversized browsing or mixed-feeding camelids. In the latest Miocene and the Pliocene of North America, the North American rhinos, one browsing and one grazing lineage, also increased in size throughout the Miocene to reach a similar size to present-day African rhinos by the end of the epoch. In the Old World, elephantids, all grazers, diversified at this time, as did the large browsers such as the calicotheres, dinotheres, and modern types of giraffids. There was also a radiation of the civotherine giraffids of similar size to the giant camelids. In North America, the rhinos were gone by the end of the Miocene, and the giant camelids did not survive past the Pliocene, but the diversity of large browsers survived in the Old World through the Pleistocene. Again, the situation of North America as an island continent probably accounts for its greater and earlier pattern of extinctions of large animals. The only mega-herbivores to survive into the Pleistocene in North America were the mammutid and gomphotheriid proboscideans, which were joined by the elephantid mammoths, including the woolly mammoth and imperial mammoth, at this time, along with a small number of equids, antilocaprids, and camelids, with the newly immigrant bovids and cervids. The extinction of all North American endemic ungulates and proboscideans at the end of the Pleistocene, with the exception of the pronghorn Antilocapra americana, remains enigmatic, with numerous arguments for a climatic change, human hunting, or some combination of the two. African savanna habitats were first prominent in the Pliocene, after the initial radiation of specialized grazing bovids such as hippotragines, e.g. sable, and alsilophanes, e.g. wildebeest, but the establishment of extensive open savannas of dry secondary grasslands versus woodland savanna or seasonally flooded edaphic grasslands were not apparent until the start of the Pleistocene, around 2 million years ago, which is also when C4 grasses first appeared in Africa. At this time, the bovids with definitive specialized craniodental grazing adaptations appeared, evolving from earlier mixed feeding forms, and the total numbers of grazing taxa approached those of today. The modern equid genus Equus, first evolving in North America, appeared in the Old World in the late Pliocene, around 2.5 million years ago. Some remaining Hipparionine equids, persistently three-toed forms, survived alongside Equus for a while, but eventually became extinct by the mid-Pleistocene. The grazing white rhino, genus Ceratotherium, also made its first appearance in the African Pliocene. During the Pleistocene, grazing megaherbivores such as the woolly mammoth, Mammothus, and several types of hypsodont rhinos, including the woolly rhino, Coelodonta, were prevalent at mid to high latitudes, as were horses and large grazing bovids such as bison and muskoxen. This array of large grazing ungulates, along with some mixed feeders, e.g. saiga antelope and reindeer, comprised the fauna of the late Pleistocene steppe tundra biome in northern Eurasia and Alaska, a habitat type with no modern analog. In both North America and the Old World today, bovids remain the prime grazers, although the diversity is much less in the Northern Hemisphere than it is in Africa. A few low-latitude Asian cervids are today the at least fresh grass grazers, such as the Barasinga and the Pear David's deer. There is no equivalent radiation among cervids and bovids as to alsilophanes and hippotragines. However, it is not clear why cervids never really expanded into the grazing niche and never colonized Africa out of the south of the Sahara. Ungulates such as deer, tapirs, camelids, llamas, as well as now extinct or extirpated forms such as the Gomphotheria proboscideans and equids dispersed into South America in the Pliocene around 2.5 million years ago. The equids and gomphotheres diversified into the grazing niche, but no ungulate is a true grazer there today. Tapirs have remained as specialized browsers. Llamas never diversified much beyond their present day high altitude mixed feeding ecological role. And while cervids underwent the most profound diversification, they never evolved any true grazing forms. Although the marsh deer is a fresh grass grazer, bovids never reached South America until introduced by humans, and it is unclear why no cervid evolved there to be a specialized grazer. 2.3. Discussion and conclusions. Grazing is a fairly recent evolutionary specialization among ungulates. Although extensive grasslands first appeared around 25 million years ago, and along with them, ungulates with hypsodont teeth designed to withstand a greater amount of abrasion, specialized grazers did not appear until around 10 million years ago, and most of the true grazers are out of the Pleistocene age. Many different lineages have evolved intermediate feeding types, but a few have progressed to specialized grazing. Although the majority of grazers today are bovids, and specialized grazing evolved a minimum of four times within this clade, within the Bovini, Caprini, Hippotragini, and Alsilophanes, no other ruminant, past or present, has evolved a specialized grazing form, although a few modern cervids such as Blastoceras, Elephurus, and a species of Cervus and Axis have a grass-dominated diet. Within other artiodactyls, grazers have appeared recently, Pleistocene, among suids, the warthog, and hippos, but they were not in evidence before this time. In contrast, grazing appears to have been easier to evolve among hindgut fermenters. Klaus et al., 2003, present an elegant argument for why ruminants, past and present, did not attain the size of rhinos and elephants. Ruminants have longer passage times of the digesta than hindgut fermenters of a comparable body size, around 40 hours for a horse versus around 60 hours for a cow, and the time for the passage of the digesta increases with body size. However, if the passage time approaches 4 days, an acute problem develops with growth of methogenic bacteria, which convert acetic acid, the main volatile fatty acid product of cellulose fermentation, to methane and carbon dioxide, with resultant high energy losses. Elephants solve this problem by adapting relatively shorter and broader guts, thus speeding up the passage rate of the digesta. But this would not be a possible solution for a ruminant, where the ruminoreticulum portion of the stomach is specifically adapted to delay food passage. Thus, ruminants are limited to body sizes where their digestive passage time is less than 4 days, likely under 1,500 kilograms. Within the equids, several different clades in the subfamily Equinae progressed from mixed feeding to grazing, although only Equus survives. Grazing appeared independently with several different clades of rhinos, including the white rhino and among extinct forms of North American Teleosaurus and the Old World woolly rhino Coelodonta and the steppe rhino Elasmotherium. Grazing also evolved three times within the Proboscidea, within Elephantidae, Stegodontidae, and Gomphotheriidae, and once in Hyracoidea, Procavia. It is commonly thought that bovids somehow outcompeted equids, but this is erroneous. Equids were predominantly a New World radiation, and their decline in taxonomic diversity in the late Cenozoic was due to being stranded on an island continent with no tropical refuge zone when the more productive savanna grasslands turned to less productive prairie. North American equids never encountered bovids until the immigration of sheep and bison by the Pleistocene, by which time only one genus, Equus, remained. However, this taxon was still a very prominent part of the Pleistocene faunas, and the fossils are extremely numerous, suggesting individual abundance in life. North American equids only went extinct in the end Pleistocene extinctions that decimated the megafauna. Equids that had migrated to the Old World encountered an existing bovid-dominated faunal community, which may explain their lack of taxonomic diversification there in comparison with North America. While modern equids have diversified into a variety of different species, e.g. asses in Asia, zebras in Africa, they are individually numerous when encountered, there is still usually only one species of equid in any faunal community. This was also broadly true of Old World fossil communities. And all extant equid species belong to a single genus with essentially the same ecology, i.e. herd living, specialized grazing. The bias of today's world suggests a normality of the predominance of ruminant grazers, and also a diversity of grazers among other ungulates. However, the fossil record shows us that we need to think more about why grazing is so difficult to attain in non-bovid ruminants, and why, in general, it appears to be easy to evolve an animal that takes in some grass in its diet, but not to evolve a specialized grazer.